Hurricane Harvey struck last week. Hurricane Irma is out in the Atlantic building up steam this week. So it seemed like the perfect time to talk to my old friend Jeff Goodell, who is a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine, but also an author on environmental issues, including a new book called The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities.
And the Remaking of the Civilized World.
But full disclosure, you and I have known each other for 35 years when we tended bar together at Henry's Public House at the University of California at Berkeley. How did mixing golden bears and sea breezes lead you to be an environmental author?
That is a very good question that I still have not worked out myself.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 560, Water Will Come. Jeff Goodell is a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine and the author of The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World. In the wake of Hurricanes Harvey last week, Irma this week, and Jose next week, Jeff talks about how he came to write books about climate change and the challenges of creating a compelling, even hopeful narrative out of what seems like a pretty depressing subject.
When we were together at Berkeley, I had vague ideas about being a writer. You know, I was sort of thinking that I was going to be one of those guys who goes off and sits in the woods and writes the great American novel. And it quickly became clear after we graduated. I went to Columbia Graduate School for Fiction Writing, got an MFA there. And but it quickly became clear that, like, nobody was interested in my fiction. That if I was going to write novels, I was going to have a very difficult, a long, slow, difficult life, a long, slow, difficult career. And it just so happened that when I was at Columbia, one of my fiction writing professors, his wife was helping to start a magazine in New York City that was sort of a rival to a New York magazine. It was called 7 Days. And he said, "Oh, Jeff, you should consider journalism." And I'm like, "Yeah, right. You're saying that because you know my fiction sucks and that I'll never go anywhere." So I was like, "Try journalism or try selling cars or try something, but you need an alternative." So I went down there and started, and I'd never even covered a soccer game in my life. I didn't know anything about journalism, but totally fell in love with it and spent 2 years in New York City writing about cops and AIDS and crack. It was a crack epidemic and all that kind of stuff. And just completely, it was like that classic cliche thing of sort of finding yourself. And so I started doing journalism, and then the whole environmental thing is a whole other story that started quite later when the New York Times asked me to write about the comeback of the coal industry during the second George W. Bush administration. It just became clear to me that, you know, climate change and what we're doing with our energy and the climate is the great story of our time. And it interests me not because I'm such a kind of tree hugger, you know, not because I do obviously have strong feelings about the natural world, but it's not that so much as it is. It's just a great story about how we as human beings are going to deal with this. And I've been covering that for 15 years now, more or less full time.
Well, and if you're going to write about this stuff, yes, dive into the biggest story of our time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The reason I was moved to reach out to you this week is not only because of the devastation of Harvey, but because you had posted on Facebook about an interaction you'd had with somebody who called your post or your writing depressing. Which I thought was ironic because I remember you as a guy with a great sense of humor, or at the very least, a great laugh.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that somebody who writes about the dangers of climate change comes to it from a hard, serious approach. You write about this stuff because you love it and you want to change stuff.
Right. I mean, I write about it because I think it's important, because I think, you know, the job of journalism, in my view, is to, you know, like I said in that post that you responded to, you know, I think human beings are amazing creatures, but they do a lot of stupid shit. And my job as a journalist, part of my job is to point out some of that stupid shit and to, you know, incrementally and in my own way, help to make the world a better place. I mean, no one goes into journalism with the idea that they're going to get rich. You know, I'm not doing it for money. I mean, obviously I have a family to feed and all that, but I do feel like it's my contribution to making the world a better place. And I don't mean that in the sense of the sort of touchy-feely way, but I do think that, you know, journalism has a role, has a purpose. And we see that with the Trump administration. When we see that, we're around us every day. And I feel very deeply and strongly about that. And, you know, I'm sorry that some of my, I tell people, I'm sorry that some of my stories are bad news, but you know what? There's bad news out there.
Yeah.
And a part of the skill of trying to be a good writer, and the reason I like writing for Rolling Stone, is that, you know, trying to tell these stories in ways that are engaging, that don't immediately say, oh, that's dark, bleak shit, I don't want to read that, you know, and to really capture the drama, to capture the humanity, to capture the risk, the courage, in some cases the cowardice of these major players in this huge drama that's happening all around us.
Well, and as I said on that in your Facebook post too, that, you know, less stupid shit is a rallying cry I think we can all get behind. And I think it seems like, I mean, following your work as I have done for the past decade or so, it seems like you're moving the needle. I mean, you're selling books, people are reading your stuff, somehow you managed to be the person who toured with President Obama around Alaska talking about climate change. It seems like as if your writing and your reporting has made it up to the very highest echelons.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, I don't have a science background. I was an English major at Berkeley. When we were bartending, I was, you know, studying English. But I feel like I have some talent for translating stuff into, you know, language that, you know, complex scientific and engineering and political ideas, and translating them into language that regular people can understand. And I think that, you know, I like writing for Rolling Stone partly for that reason. It's not, you know, the New York Times audience. It's a different kind of audience. In order for a piece to succeed there, it has to really be able to talk to some guy who's laying on his couch listening to Radiohead. You really have to think about, how do I reach this person, you know, and how do I tell this story in a way that engages people? I mean, you know, you know this better than anyone with theater. It's like, how do you produce this thing in a way that, you know, does truth to the thing that you're trying to tell, the story you're trying to tell, but at the same time is new and engaging for the audience and makes them sit up in their seat a little bit and say, oh, that was cool the way they did that. I mean, how do you do Hamlet for the 12 billionth time and make it interesting? And it's not a different question for me. It's like, how do I tell the story of this hurricane that's about to wipe out Miami in a way that is compelling for you and for me and for my daughter and for my mom and for the kid who's laying on the couch listening to Radiohead?
Yeah. And I imagine that less stupid shit is a phrase that you can get away with more easily in Rolling Stone than the New York Times.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, the New York Times does great stuff, and I don't mean in any way to knock what they do, but I think that in Rolling Stone and in my books, I have a freedom with language that I really appreciate. And, you know, I come to this as a writer, not as a environmentalist and not as a scientist. I come at this to tell stories. They just happen to be stories about our world that I think are really important. But I'm really interested in storytelling. I mean, that's really what I want to do.
I'm Andy Zaltzman, co-host of the Bugle podcast, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Well done.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Next week, our U.S. fall tour begins with performances of all the great books abridged, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged, and the ultimate Christmas show abridged in Culver and South Bend, Indiana, West Long Branch, New Jersey, Aiken, South Carolina, Davis, California, Laramie, Wyoming, Asheville, North Carolina, Maryville, Tennessee, Somerville, New Jersey, San Jose, California, Algona, Iowa, Reston, Virginia, and La Mirada, California. Also, in 2 weeks, we begin a two-week run of the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged, revised in Hong Kong, followed also by a two-week run in Singapore. Next winter, we'll be performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged off-Broadway at the New Victory Theater. And next June of 2018, we'll return to the Pittsburgh Public Theater to close out their season with our production of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with author and Rolling Stone contributing editor Jeff Goodell.
So your latest book, The Water Will Come, I have not read because it's still coming out, but is what you've written playing out now in the real world? What science has predicted? Is that what's happening with maybe not only the hurricanes Harvey and Irma, but with the fires in the West? I mean, is Mother Nature actually producing the story that you've written?
In a weird way, yes. But in also in a weird way, that's no surprise. Because the book is really about, how, because we've heated the planet up as much as we have, the great ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica are going to melt, and they're going to, and the seas are going to rise. And there's basically, that's a sure thing. There's no really debating that point. The debate is how fast it will happen and how far these seas will rise. And, you know, this book idea came out of my being in New York during Hurricane Sandy. And I was there. I wasn't actually in the city during it. I came right afterwards. I was upstate. But, I had this idea of like, okay, that was like a storm surge of 10 feet that came into lower Manhattan, which is about what the high-end projections are for sea level rise at the end of this century. So I thought, wow, that's a good example. What if that water came in like we saw with Sandy, but it never left? That's what we're thinking about by the end of the century. And like, that's a great kind of thought experiment. So I started talking to a few people and they said, well, yeah, it was a big mess here in New York, but if you looked at Miami, and I was like, no, why? They said, well, that Miami is really screwed. And I went like, oh, really? So I went down there and I happened to be there during what are called king tides when these high tides come in. And I was there for 2 minutes and it became clear that Miami as we know it today will not exist by the end of the century. There's no scenario in which Miami survives to the end of the century. And that's a mind-boggling idea. I'm not saying this in a sensational way. It's just a sheer fact. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be Atlantis, but it's going to not exist as we know it today. And so that was mind-boggling, and nobody had thought about that yet. And I wrote a piece for Rolling Stone called Goodbye Miami that was a big sensation, and that led to the book deal and following up on the book.
Boy, your friend isn't wrong, though. That's a really depressing idea. But as you say, is there no way that we can be smarter and try to backpedal and prevent any of this from happening?
Well, we can certainly, by cutting carbon emissions and stuff, we can certainly slow the rise, and especially over the long term. But in the near term, no. I mean, not really. And it is a depressing story because the idea of like wiping out Miami, of course, is not a happy tale. However, there is a very interesting side to this, which is that there's going to be a lot of, speaking of stupid shit, we've done a lot of stupid shit in how we build cities and how we think about the world. And Houston, what happened in Houston is a great example of that. And the similar thing is going to happen in Miami. I mean, Miami as we know it today won't exist. But, some version of Miami, you know, living with water, canals, Venice-like, you know. I don't want to paint a real pretty picture of it because there's going to be a lot of industrial debris floating around, and it's not going to be sort of pristine waters with gondolas. But there is a way of imagining living with water that's really fun and creative. And, you know, I think it's going to be a big challenge for humanity in lots of coastal cities because people love to live with water. How are we going to do that now? I mean, we're not going to do it by building billion-dollar condos right on the beach that can't move or float or anything. But maybe floating cities will emerge. Maybe cities on stilts. Who knows? I think there's a lot of creativity that is going to be a kind of unleashed by this.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling for what the next story will be? Or is there always something to write about?
Oh, with the thing with that's the thing with climate change. I mean, in this sort of beat that I have is that it just keeps getting weirder and bigger. And there's like, you know, a million stories. And the question is figuring out the ones that you want to spend 2 or 3 years working on a book on, you know. And I spent 3 years on this book. And, you know, you have to find terrain that has not been already written about by other people, finding ways to tell the story in compelling framework. And then, you know, get lucky when it comes out. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe the week my book comes out, you know, Trump will decide to bomb North Korea and, you know, nobody will really care. My book will suddenly not be terribly relevant.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Jeff Goodell's book, The Water Will Come, Rising Seas, Sinking Cities, and the Remaking of the Civilized World, will be published on October 24th, 2017, but is available for pre-order now. Send us your books about the most important story of our time via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @AustinTitchener, and the RSC is now on Instagram too, @ReducedShakespeareCompany. And you can follow Jeff Goodell on Twitter, @JeffGoodell. Thanks as always to Melting Ice Cap Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Kit Lofgren. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andy Zaltzman, creator and host of the Bugle podcast, still the greatest audio newspaper for a resolutely visual world. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 560/1680th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Well, that's looking on the bright side. Then you'll have a whole slew of other environmental issues to be writing about. There won't be anybody left to read them.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.